Dr. Roger Hodgkinson is an accredited and highly respected pathologist. Many of you know him. He is a friend to this show. You've probably seen him perhaps speaking in Canada at many places, including the Freedom Convoy, somebody that showed up for the people to tell the truth, to tell what was happening, what was going on. And he's a dear friend of mine, and I have the most respect for him. Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Hello, Laura Lynn. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. I'm sad that we always talk about the worst kind of things that are going on in the world. I'm sad that we always, have to meet under these circumstances, but there's an awful lot going on.
Well, you know, there's an awful lot to talk about. I was listening very attentively to your last interview with Liberty, about the accumulating number of physician deaths. What I think is most important for people to realize is that, yes, these were healthy physicians. They would almost certainly have been coerced into vaccination by either their faculty or their clinic or their government role or whatever. The likelihood of them having been coerced into vaccination is very high. It's obviously tragic that these doctors are dying, but I would paint a much bigger picture. They happen to be doctors, but they are the canary in the coal mine. We're focusing on them because of a demographic that's easily identified. If you were to then calculate the number of Canadians who are dying in a similar circumstance, that number would be very scary indeed. And that kind of number corresponds to what we're hearing, of course, with the new commonest cause of death, at least in Alberta, which is described as SADS, sudden adult death syndrome. It's like a takeoff on SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, which has a different cause. But sudden adult death syndrome, of which these physicians are probably examples of, is now the commonest cause of death, at least in Alberta, where I live. That means more people are dying unexpectedly with no cause than are dying from strokes and heart attacks and diabetes, for example. It's never, ever happened before. When I was doing medical examiner autopsies 40 years ago, signing a death out as unknown cause was exquisitely rare. It virtually never happened. There was almost always a cause of death that could be identified at autopsy. And now, of course, we're seeing this enormous number, largely, of course, because they've not been autopsied. And that should be insisted upon. I mean, you can't force
a family
to.
Yeah, that's amazing to hear, Dr. Hodgkinson, because many of us wouldn't know, how often somebody might be, a family pays to have an autopsy done. And we don't know how often you'd say, well, we just really can't figure it out. But you're saying that's rare. You always want to find what is the reason that this incredible person who meant something to a lot of people has died. And we've got a picture that maybe if Aaron can put that up on the side, I don't know. But these are the important people to a lot of people that have died. And this is a new one, actually. This is an Ontario paramedic. Just today, I believe, is when we heard about this. An Ontario paramedic dies suddenly while on jet ski at a U.S. cottage, the family says. This is happening far too often. We have the athletes that are just falling over. And so to hear your experience when you were doing, your best work and examining dead bodies for the cause of death, you wanted to find that reason. And for them to be coming, I'm sure they're not just ignorant people, But for them to be coming up with unknown cause of death, what's going on?
There's willful ignorance is the motivator. The people that are responsible for what I'm now calling the big kill, the people that are ultimately responsible for this, the medical officers of health, the premiers of the provinces, TAM in Ottawa, etc., etc. The people responsible do not want to know the scale of the consequences of their actions, just from not just the clot shot, as I prefer to call it. It's certainly not a vaccine of a traditional nature. Not just from the clot shot, but also from the mandates, the suicides, the enormous carnage that's gone on, not just in Canada, but around the world, from these ridiculous interventions for a condition that was never a public health emergency, with responses that were never indicated, never tested, and have resulted in catastrophic consequences. We're given the scale of death that's going on, it should be an enormous medical problem. It should be for the authorities an enormous problem to investigate with due speed, by whatever means. That is not happening. They don't wish to be found culpable for the cause. That's an additional damnation for them, quite apart from introducing it in the first place, quite apart from not monitoring the consequences, quite apart from deaths, the massive disability, which is 10 times greater than the deaths. They're culpable at so many levels. Having said all of that, there was a statistic today that I'd like to reveal, at least in the States, that gives some hope for the future. Because in the States, only 5% of children currently have had the first vaccination. Now, for any parent listening, I would go on my knees to beg you not to vaccinate your children. The children are being sacrificed on the high altar of these gods, these technocrats. And child sacrifice is not going to save granny in the nursing home. It's going to kill children, each one of which is not a statistic. Each one of those children who would die from this vaccine, this clot shot, is as close to someone as my children are to me. This has to stop, not just for children, but for the entire population. It's the most catastrophic intervention in medical history. It's at that scale of enormity.
So very, very devastating. We see on the VAERS reports that they have listed well over, I think it's probably about 150 or more right now of kids that have passed away under the age of 18 from the shot. And yet parents, are fighting in the courts to be able to have their child vaccinated, and judges are ruling that for the best interest of the child, in spite of expert testimony from doctors that child should be vaccinated. Our courts have also participated in this crime against humanity.
We're seeing the edifice crumbling. We're seeing Walensky at the CDC saying that it didn't meet our expectations. What a mealy-mouthed, excuse me, I could swear like a trooper, given my true feelings about her. Yes, it certainly didn't meet expectations. It was killing people, for God's sake. It's that bad. These people should be hauled into court and tried for criminal acts. They're not stupid. Walensky ran infectious disease at the Mass General. A very smart lady by any account. But suddenly catapulted into this political realm. She advocated something that she knew right from the get-go, was killing people. That is utterly inexcusable. It's a criminal act. It should be tried in court and she should be jailed. And I'm not the only person saying that. Remember, after Nuremberg, seven physicians swung. The most terrible acts were performed upon those Jewish inmates in the concentration camps. And I'm not minimizing that when I say this. The consequence of these actions by these technocrats is massively greater than the tragedies that happened in those concentration camps. Cumulatively, internationally, we're probably talking about 1 million people dying or more, directly due to the interventions of one sort or another. And including in that, of course, the denial, the absolute forbidden prescribing of agents that were cheap, safe, and effective. I'm talking here about ivermectin and vitamin D. They are culpable at so many levels, and they will not be able to hide from the courts behind this veil of anonymity, you know, being a bureaucrat and being protected, etc., etc. No, they knew what they were doing. I'm not saying it was intentional by any means. But what I am saying is that by following political diktats and following the WHO and following China's lead without doing due diligence, they become culpable in the consequences. There is no hiding for them, and we're coming for them. The court cases are starting. Fauci is now, of course, found it convenient to resign because he knows he's going to be hounded. He's going to find his time in court, hopefully before he dies. The scale of this, Laura Lynn, is unprecedented. It's orders of magnitude greater than anything else of this nature that's ever happened in medicine. It's massive. And we may not have seen the end of it. We're obviously very concerned about the emergence of cancer. Not just cancers that were under control, but new cancers, because the immune system's principal role, of course, is not just to identify bugs and infections, it's to identify anything that's not you. Infections are not you, but cancer isn't you. There's serious concern about a massive increase in new cancers across all age groups. That's not being studied either. There's a deafening silence given the scale of what's going on. We're seeing people who have been vaccinated coming down after correcting for prevalence. That means when you say per 100,000, vaccinated people are now coming down with COVID much more often than unvaccinated people, correcting for prevalence. This so-called vaccine isn't simply failing at stopping you getting it. It's actually giving it to you, increasing your chances of getting it, as opposed to stopping it or reducing the chances of getting it. Exactly the opposite of what should be expected for an effective vaccine of this nature. This is how catastrophic the whole thing is. And the bureaucrats, as hiding as effectively as they can, issuing mealy-mouthed statements like Walensky, but that's not good enough. We're coming for you because you've killed people. It's as simple as that. And the colleges of physicians across this country and this once fine country, not the country I joined in 1970, the colleges of physicians and surgeons across this country in every province, I am saying to them, directly and publicly, having been a soldier for organized medicine for my entire career, with never a complaint made against me until now, I am saying publicly, they are co-conspirators with government in state-sanctioned murder. They are doing exactly the opposite of what they're there to do, which is to protect you from me. to make sure I'm not cutting off the wrong leg, make sure I'm not a paedophile, whatever, whatever. That's their job. And instead of that, they're denying informed consent by preventing physicians from articulating the dangers of the vaccine. They're doing more harm than good because they're denying access to very helpful medications that are cheap and safe. At every level, the colleges are guilty of the very crimes that they would normally take a physician's license away. They themselves are practicing medical malpractice. And it's not just on a single patient like it would be for a doctor with one patient. No, it's on society. That's why it's so much graver, because of the millions of people that are involved, and not just one-on-one, but millions of people. And the statistics are now becoming absolutely overwhelming.
Do you think they're going to have to finally admit this? As we see Dr. Pierre Corey, he put in this, he said that massive miscarriage rates among the vaccinated pregnant women are found buried in the Pfizer documents. And as we know, we're seeing that the rates of miscarriages and the, you know, there's even testing that has shown that the sperm is not reacting right for a period of time, it says. I don't know how long that period is, but after people get the shots, we do not know whether men and women are going to be affected with their fertility long term. We have a lot of miscarriages. I myself have really sought, because Epic Times reported that there was the 13 miscarriages in North Vancouver, and I have called the hospital. Then they called me back and said someone would call me. Then no one did. Then I called again and they said, we'd like the request in writing. Then I wrote them, could you please confirm about these miscarriages? And now nothing. And so I don't know what to say. It seems to me a pretty simple thing to say, no, that never happened. That was a rumor, you know, that got out of hand and it never happened. But they will not even confirm that. And not a word. I'm not being sued for saying that I think it did. You know, I don't know. But obviously, a lot more harms are coming our way.
If we have time, Laura Lynn, I'd like to take you and your listeners through some of the issues that are involved in fertility.
Please do.
Post clot shot. And I'll start off by saying this. As a pathologist with a very full, extensive career, I have opened up hundreds of uteruses that have come from the operating room. The gynecologists take it out. They don't open it up. We do as pathologists in order to look at the pathology, to take sections and look at them microscopically. I can tell you that the endometrium is the lushest, most fragile tissue in the entire human body. You can put your finger in it, just like you can put your finger in the brain. It's extremely delicate, and it's meant to be so as a nurturing environment for the fertilized ovum that comes down the fallopian tube and implants into the endometrium. The blood vessels in the endometrium are exquisitely fragile. Witness how easy it is to make them bleed a woman's menstrual period every month. Those vessels are all lined by a receptor for the spike protein. The receptor is called the ACE2 receptor. So it should come as no surprise to hear of all these menstrual abnormalities that are happening after vaccination, because the spike protein, being massively overproduced in some women, hones in on many blood vessels, including the blood vessels in the lining of the uterus, causing them to thrombose or bleed. Hence the reason for the menstrual abnormalities post-vaccination, so-called. But that's merely the backdrop. That fertilized ovum that's traveling down, hoping to be received by a welcoming, lush endometrium, suddenly finds itself landing in a space that's been devastated, not at all welcoming. And so the likelihood of that ovum implanting and having a successful pregnancy is much lower. And that's one of the principal reasons, I think, why we're seeing a decline in fertility for women. The other reason is that the spike protein, the antibodies directed against the spike protein, which is the intended consequence of this clot shot, those antibodies against the spike protein happen to cross-react to a particular protein in the placenta called syncytin. And that attack against the developing placenta would be another reason for the developing fetus not to survive. But the story gets much, much more serious than that. Just a digression for a minute before getting into the developing female fetus. Spermatozoa counts have been dropping internationally for decades for reasons that are unclear. But we do know that superimposed upon that, there's an additional 15% reduction in the concentration of spermatozoa following injection with the clot shot. We don't know how
And
long
what
that's
is
going
that?
to go.
Spermatozoa.
Well,
What is that?
the spermatozoa, of course, is the male gamete
Sperm.
that's
Okay.
required for fertilization of the ovum,
Okay, got it.
as a result of in semen, as a result of sexual intercourse. So that compounds the problem, of course, of infertility, because that's only the count, by the way. It doesn't reflect the actual viability and metabolism of an individual spermatozoan. It's simply the crude count. There may well be other functional abnormalities that are not being studied. Anyway, but to get to the big point is this. We know from the Freedom of Information request of the for the Japanese, as a result of the Pfizer submission there, that was done by Dr. Byron Bridle out of Guelph. We do know that that study that was presented to the Japanese and released very reluctantly by Pfizer showed that nanoparticles without the mRNA inside them, just the naked particles, when injected into rats, those particles homed on the rat ovaries to a very significant degree. The third highest concentration in the rat was in the rat ovaries. Now, baby girls are born with all the eggs they're ever going to have in their entire life. They don't make any more when they're born. It's about a million or so. And so each one of those ova is incredibly precious. So there could be an inflammatory attack going on against the ovary of a developing female fetus, because we also know that nanoparticles of that size are well known to pass through what we call the placental barrier, the thing that keeps the baby safe from all kinds of noxious things. So these nanoparticles from the clot shot that are known to be inflammatory and known to concentrate in rat ovaries, by the way, not studied in humans, conveniently, despite knowing that, those nanoparticles known to be inflammatory are getting through the placenta and could be, again, not studied, could be attacking the ovary of the developing female fetus. Translation. This may not be simply an effect on fertility. It could be causing infertility, only manifest 20 years later when that little girl becomes of reproductive age. This is the scale. This is the scale of stuff that is still not studied. Things with gigantic consequences. The only saving grace is that it seems, at least in the States, that parents are smartening up and are choosing not to get their children vaccinated. I think you can appreciate, Laura Lynn, I'm a senior physician. I'm trying not to exaggerate. I'm trying to simply relate things that could be happening that are of gigantic importance, that are well known to the authorities, and are not being investigated. That is one of the scariest stories coming out of COVID.
And I guess as a doctor, when you see that it's not being investigated and nothing makes sense, because that's been the problem all along, it doesn't make sense that good doctors, you know, if Dr. Teresa Tam is such a good doctor, why are they not looking into all of these things? Why is Dr. Bonnie Henry in the British Columbia area, you know, and Henshaw in Alberta? Why is there not more investigation and clarity and, you know, putting things out in a very easy to understand manner that we're all in this, we're battling this? Instead, it's just the shutdown and no one talks about it. No one is talking about the deaths. But like you say, there is beginning to be an onslaught. Everybody seems to know someone that's injured or dead. And so I don't think they can hide it forever. I wonder when the turnaround comes.
When I've done lots of rallies and on this topic for the Alberta Prosperity Project, which is advocating for a solution to this madness by declaring an independent Republic of Alberta as a much faster way of turning the ship around. But at those rallies, initially, until I got so tired of getting the same response, I asked this open-ended question because of it's a straw poll, but we have to rely on straw polls if the government's intentionally not measuring things in a robust way. And so the question I would pose to everyone, 500 at a time, was this: would everyone here please put up their hand if you're aware of anyone in your personal acquaintance who, following vaccination with the clot shot, has had a serious life-altering event, such as heart attack, stroke, or pulmonary embolus, not just a sore arm and a headache? Would you please put up your hand if you know of anyone who's suffered that kind of consequence? The first time I asked that question, I was quite unprepared for the response. I was gobsmacked, because a third of the people there put up their hand. And I said to them, look around, would you? Does that seem like a rare problem to you? I don't think so. So I asked the question at the subsequent rallies, and I got approximately the same number of hands going up. Is it reduced to this? Do we have to do straw polls to try to figure out the scale of what's going on, when it's so obvious that it's catastrophic, having to be reduced to straw polls? Even VAERS is voluntary, remember. It's grossly understated. 30,000 deaths attributed to the clot shot in VAERS, probably understated by a factor of at least 10, if not 40, according to Jessica Rose, an esteemed Canadian researcher who lives in Israel right now, who publishes quite a bit. That scale of death, now that's just death. That doesn't include the multiple of that, of life-changing events like strokes and heart attacks and pulmonary emboli, Guillain-Barré, et cetera, et cetera. The carnage is massive. And that's why these doctors, tragic as each one of their deaths are the canary in the coal mine, Laura Lynn. Physiologically, they're no different from you and me. But they're a demographic that gets attention. But you should multiply that probably by 1,000 times to know the true incidence of what's going across Canada. Look at the ratio of physicians to population and just do that multiple, right? That's the scale of things that are going on. And these technocrats just don't give a damn. They're still pushing this poison on people. Despite the overwhelming evidence of carnage, and despite the fact that even in the best case scenario, this so-called vaccine is directed against the very first version that came that was the problem, the alpha variant, has absolutely no benefit for Omicron. And of course, now Big Pharma is coming out with another so-called vaccine that's meant to attack Omicron, but the CDC and FDA are giving it a pass through with no trials at all. A totally new product that's going to be pushed on the population with not even the rudimentary trial that the original product had. It's
Shocking.
black, Laura Lynn. When you're a senior physician who's fairly knowledgeable about these things, it's a bloody nightmare.
I have no doubt that when you sit in your chair once in a while in a quiet evening and you consider what you know and what you are seeing, that that's a very dark moment. And you, among many, truly understand this. And you had your own bout with COVID, and you fought the good fight, and you know that it wasn't an easy fight, as you told
Well,
us, I
excuse
believe,
me.
on one of the.
It was my wife that nursed me, and
Yes.
Peter McCullough in the States was my
Thank God for him.
specialist physician, supported by my outstanding GP locally. The
Good
three
for
of
you.
them, the three of them pulled me through without going to hospital.
Good for you.
Yeah,
Good for you.
but hey. That happens, right? Life's risky. Get used. I'm a pathologist. Death happens. Sorry, get used to it. You could have a head-on collision going to work in the morning. You might have a perianeurism pop in your head, when you're eating breakfast tomorrow.
Right.
That's the
You
reality of
must feel
life.
good though. You've got this
But
natural immunity now, where everyone that's taken the shot, we have this increase in cancers, increase in all kinds of things going on, sudden adult death syndrome happening, people just collapsing, doctors dying, and you don't have to face that because you didn't take the shot.
That there are long-term consequences of having COVID infection, just like there are long-term consequences of so many diseases. I'm not out of the woods by any means, but I'm quite prepared to live with that risk. It's just a risk of living. The best way of describing that is, of course, that people should not be totally paranoid now about every sniffle that they get. Life is not about delaying death. Life is about living. Enjoying the time, even if it's
And we've
shortened.
certainly forgotten. We've certainly forgotten how to enjoy life. People have been literally terrorized. We've been traumatized in our nation. And I wanted to sit out here for the couple days that I'm, down here at a beach in Florida. I wanted to let everyone know that more of us should be doing that, but we're not really doing that these days. We're not living. We're afraid. Well, if we have the funds and the ability to go, we don't know if we can get back with Arrive Can, and we're traumatized because our family and our friends have we're getting this bad news, and it's affecting everyone that we worry about our families and friends who have taken it. And so what a difficult world we're in right now, Dr. Hodgkinson.
The only way out of this mess and try to prevent future messes of a similar scale is to take back control of the governance of these institutions that have been so dictatorial. And just speaking as an Albertan now, and perhaps you as a British Columbian, the chances of us doing that and succeeding against Fancy Socks in Ottawa. I have other names that are not quite as pretty. The chances of us succeeding are like a snowball in hell. It ain't going to happen. And so that's why I'm putting all my energy now supporting the Alberta Prosperity Project, which has the ultimate objective of educating people as to how fatuous it is to think that our relationship with Ottawa can change with negotiation. And the only solution is a separation, a divorce, which has to be stated as, for those that are still flag-waving patriots, like I was in Ottawa, you position it this way. Alberta is not separating from Canada. Canada left Alberta a long time ago. For the very first time, Laurelyn, 2 weeks ago, I sat down intentionally for the national anthem. I will never, ever stand up for it again. I will never wave a Canadian maple leaf unless I hold it upside down. It's not the country I joined, and I desperately want to leave it.
Wow, I know, and a lot of people are feeling that, and I thank you for your honesty, and we pray for Canada. And honestly, that is just so painful and so true how people are feeling. That's what they've done to us. That's what Trudeau and the Liberals and all of this pain has done to a lot of people. And I get it.
Taking control of governance, governance of the university, governance of the College of Physicians and Surgeons, changing the way we appoint judges, governance at all levels, the police, etc. It's at a governance level that action has to be taken, and that can only happen within an independent Republic of Alberta that has the power to do that, because the power to do that would never be granted by Ottawa.
And maybe then, you know, maybe then if there were a separation and a true return to the love of Canadian values, maybe the national anthem could be sung with vigor as the new way. You know, I hope for that. I do love that anthem, but I understand.
Let me paint a positive picture to end on, Laurelyn.
Okay.
It is going to get worse before it gets better. These technocrats are not going to fold their tent. They're going to deny. They'll fight like crazy to state the obvious. But when the truth comes out, as it will inevitably, as to this, the catastrophic scale of what's gone on over the last 2.5 years, when that starts sinking into the general population, I believe there's going to be a scale of revulsion that we're quite unprepared for. The scale of revulsion will feed into the Alberta Prosperity Project and the need to educate people about the possibility of a vibrant Republic of Alberta that would be the freest, happiest, most prosperous place on earth. And what started as in Alberta with the truckers and then morphed internationally, as we know, the Netherlands, for example, and Australia. That was an Alberta initiative that will culminate in an independent Republic of Alberta that will be a beacon for the rest of the world to run democratic jurisdictions according to the old principles of hard work, religion, family, trust, risk-taking. What a wonderful future that will be, and it's doable within 3 years. As a much faster way of getting out of this mess than fighting with Ottawa for crumbs that are left on the table.
I am tending to believe that might have to happen. So very, very difficult. But, you know, it's like being in a relationship with an abusive partner. It's been very hard, and we've been abused.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Hodkinson. I just love you.
Thank you.
And I thank you for your heart. I thank you for your amazing words. You're such a courageous man, and you say things so well, and I appreciate you. Thanks for the fight.
Thank you, Laurelyn. All the best to you.